Welcome to TalentWise, the definitive podcast for CXOs, human resource and learning and development leaders. This show comes to you from thought leaders who talk about human capital development in today's organization. How to engage and empower today's employee to be effective, competitive and relevant. Stay with us for an exciting conversation with our guest and learn how to future-proof your team. I'm your host Shubhanjan, founder of KnowledgeBridge. Hello and welcome to a special episode of TalentWise. We have been speaking to some of the best minds in the industry on future-proofing your team. Today, we present a brief roundup of thoughts from our guests who have had very interesting observations to share with us. On to our special episode. Our first guest, Ravi Mathur, founder of Encash, a leading training organization.
What are the major challenges that you see and what impact does those challenges have on actually building a future-proof team, which is an essential component for any organization looking at a long-term future?
Most of the times, even today, when an HR manager or a functional head is talking about learning and development, they are more focused on present, and very rarely people are talking about or thinking future-proofing the team, which actually should be the core objective. So the challenges which you talked about, what are the key challenges? One challenge which I guess across industry most of the people are facing, both on the service provider side as well as the client side, is what happens after the training intervention. So training interventions generally go well, basis what people want. But what happens after that is something which has been disappointing in most of the cases. And I will talk more about it later, but let me just talk about a few more challenges which I see. Another challenge which we see is that at a lot of places, learning and development is seen as a HR role or the responsibility of HR to execute it. Whereas I feel personally it is the biggest responsibility of the manager to make sure that his team is trained. But managers are often not showing as much interest as they should. So there's a second big challenge which I see. A third, which is more on the service provider side, not on the client side, is a standard vanilla training program which they have created and which they try to fit at every place. And client not having enough knowledge about how to assess a training program, they end up buying it, and after that they feel that no, it has not given them the desired results. So these are some of the key concern areas which I personally feel.
So I understand. It is sort of like HR has to handle training. So this year, let's do 15 days of training. And HR is trying to tick off that, right? That let me get this 15 days done and I have checked my box and I'm done, because I have much more pressing things about attrition, about recruitment, about review, about increment to handle than bother about training. So let's touch on the first point you spoke about. That learning intervention is failing because there is not enough or appropriate follow-up.
The biggest reason I see there is that a lot of people fail to understand the difference between training and learning. Training is an event. Learning is a process. Very many times people equate training is equal to learning, which is not. So they end up doing the event, which is training, and then they expect the result of learning to automatically come out of that, which doesn't happen. And as I said earlier, it disappoints everybody. Now what happens is, in a 2-day program, or forget about 2 days, even a 5-day program, there is a limited amount of knowledge or skill people can gather. Now the retention of that is the key. As a lot of research have suggested that typically after a month, only 10% of the learning remains with people and 90% is lost. Now that 90% is lost when there is no follow-up mechanism. If there is a robust follow-up mechanism, that 10% retention can go up to even 50%. So what I was talking about is the lack of follow-up mechanism, and that's precisely what we have also faced in our initial years. And very objectively, we thought that, okay, This is the client responsibility. So we have done a training program. We have told the client that it should be follow up. We give them the tools. We tell them this is the way you have to follow up. But 99.99% of the cases, there is no follow up after the training program. And for the first 4 years of Encash, we also believe that it is the client's responsibility, and our responsibility ends at when we have given them that, okay, this is the way you should do it. But later on, we realize that, okay, no, in this process, it's not only the client who is losing, but we are also losing, because in the long term, if the training is not giving them the impact, finally, we will also be penalized in the long run. And that's where we have started some initiative from our side proactively, where we said that, okay, no, we are going to invest in your retention mechanism. And those retention mechanisms, so I can talk about a few things which we did. So we said that why the trainer should be connected with you for 2 days, why not for the next 6 months? So our trainer talks to every participant 15 minutes every month for a period of 3 to 6 months. We say why we have to connect with you only once a month. We should connect with you every day. So we create a social media platform with a group of participants, and our trainer, our technical team connects with them every day on a topic of the program which is related to it, and keeps giving them some updates which was either covered in the program or on not covered in the program. Third thing is we convert the program in small capsules of videos, and we put it on YouTube and share that link with the participant, which they can use as and when they want. So with these three things together, we have been able to increase the retention of companies. So we have worked with a very, very large company in the cement sector, where even the CEO, when he got to know, he was happily amazed at how good the retention and actually the learning transfer was because of this methodology which we used.
Our next guest, Shalini Pillai, Office Managing Partner for Bangalore, KPMG India.
Do you see any shift in the thought process of employees? I mean, how are people responding?
So I certainly think that sense is beginning to settle in. People do understand the need for this upskilling that I'm talking about. The fact that today's youngster or consumer is so tech savvy and they have everything at their fingertips on their handheld device actually also means that the workforce is that much more ready to embrace some of what organizations want to throw their way. So today, for example, everyone's talking of learning on the go. You could simply log in when you're stuck in those traffic jams for hours on end, log in, listen to some of what's available online there, listen into some of the course contents that are out there, simply have different formats and ways for you to constantly soak in these nuggets of knowledge. And I do believe that people are a lot more conscious. Organizations are trying to define these bite-sized information that they want to send to their employees and make them a lot more aware of what's sitting outside. So I don't think, unlike a few years ago, learning and development as a function, people tried to have a lot of it defined within, and that was the place to go to find all that you need to learn and do to develop yourself while in your career journey. I clearly think that's changing. Today, learning organizations are plugging into so many other sources, acknowledging that they're only an enabler in this process. It's about providing all of those options and sources to employees, because those are kind of growing at a pace that no one organization can track or keep pace with.
So that brings us to the next point, is the necessity of being agile in the current scenario.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I really believe that, you know, while we've been talking about the need to adapt and adopt to technology and learn and upskill, end of the day, you have to also be very conscious of individual competencies, what your natural inclination is towards. Some will be the tech gurus and others won't. Solutions of tomorrow are a combination of technology, business process related change, you need the soft skills that need to plug in there. All of that has to come together to solve problems. And I'm talking when I look at it from a consulting side. But having said that, the one very fundamental element that I think goes a long way in terms of influencing the speed at which you will solve problems and embrace problems is agility. Because when we look at the business environment we're in, problems and solutions that existed 2-3 years ago are not what is topical today. What we're solving for today is not what will be the scenario 2 years from now. And hence the need to constantly recognize that change, to be able to adapt to that change, to be able to realign and quickly embrace the change is what I define as the kind of agility that's required, which is a very fundamental element that drives success. We've seen it historically in organizations that have not quite kept pace and have crumbled. The companies, if you simply analyze the Fortune 100 companies, or you look at the companies that rule the capital markets and the evolution in that, will tell you how organizations have evolved and what it has meant in the business world. So when you look at that kind of change for the workforce, how conscious are you of that? How ready are you to be able to change? And there are different dimensions of that change. It's also not so easy to kind of train people to be agile. Though I would say it's a softer, there are elements that are from a soft skill perspective. A lot of it is also experiential in terms of how do you expose people to this kind of change such that they're registering their learnings along the way and recognizing how they're learning to hence be more agile. So the whole agility quotient, if you want to call it that, I think is a big enabler in this piece on future proofing, because we don't know what the future is necessarily. So how do you deal with that lack of structure, with that lack of certainty, the need to be ready for what comes your way and very quickly adapt and adopt to it?
Now let us take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear our guests take the discussion forward on issues that impact future-proofing of teams.
You are listening to a Show How To audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences.
Welcome back. Let's continue in this journey of discovery and listen to our guests. Our third guest, Rahul Gupta, a technologist, venture capitalist, and founder and CEO at RT Global Info Solutions and eVista Ventures. My question is more about organization. How does the organizational leadership, which is looking at the team as a composite, so team is a complementary set of capabilities, right? So everybody is not having the same skill sets. As an individual, the challenges are different. How do you stay relevant? How do you stay future-proof? But as a team, the challenges are different. From your vantage point, you're looking at multiple companies right now who are building their teams and trying the same thing. How do you see the organization and the leadership challenges vis-a-vis the team?
So I think, again, I will say what are the different things or what changes have happened over the last 20 years. So few of the changes. The youngster today is more ambitious. So in a way, we can say the ambition levels have increased. Everybody is more exposed and exposed to the same information. So knowledge, like again, earlier we used to say that if you know something, information used to be knowledge, information used to be a strength or an asset, which is no more there. So in a way, so when you talk of teams, when you talk of any organization, and when you talk, suppose I look at any emerging company. So, I will look at that company, and I will say that there will be some leaders who will take the company forward. Okay, and again, very traditionally we know, okay, somebody needs to be good in sales, somebody needs to be good in technology development, and we talk of operations, we talk of all kind of functions which are normal. Now there are some new functions which have got added, okay, very interestingly, which is rightly so. And the other thing is the boundaries of functions have got, in a way, there are no boundaries now. Okay, if somebody says I'm a sales head and I'm not bothered about finance, and I'm a finance head, I'm not bothered about operations. So that phenomena of silos has gone away. Everybody needs to be all-rounder. Everybody needs to understand what is happening. So everybody needs to be connected to the whole organizational situation. Okay, so that is another reality which is right now there. So again, but I will again say that if we have, so again I start with the person, I will say, okay, if there is a requisite, if I have like, I for a running of organization, I need 10 strong pillars who need to have some one or two strength in one area, but they are like all rounders and they understand the other areas reasonably well. So I will try to find those youngsters. But what again I am saying is, and I will go back to my previous thing, lot of times we do mistake of trying to find experienced senior people from the industry and trying to retrofit them in our organization. My experience shows that is maybe work, that can work well, but maybe what I have done and I have seen success, and all models are fine, but it is a question of what model you adopt, is finding out little young talent within the organization and then giving them experience and taking them to next level so that they take the responsibility of those pillars which you are trying to create in an organization. So that is a little, so I will tell you what another different story. So I give a lot of importance to this word called rate of change. So and this comes from a experience which I had in the life. So I heard one psychiatrist mentioning this story, that husband and wife came to him. And it was a love story, they used to date, and 20 years back they got married, and now they found that they are not fit for each other and they are not getting along with each other. So he did a lot of analysis and he told them that what happened is 20 years back you were at the same level in terms of your thinking, your mindset, your, now rate of change of one person has been X and rate of change of second person has been 3X. So today, after 20 years, you are now different people, or you are different people and not matching with each other, because one person's rate of change was 3 times the other person's rate of change. So in today's organization, I will look at, after looking at a person and looking at his basic fundamental criteria of integrity, of excitement, of energy, of basic education. Okay, the next thing I will look at it, how much hunger he has so that his rate of change is maintained. So this is a very critical aspect. So again, these are basic aspects, and once that is there, then it is a question of ensuring that they become long-term players in the organization, and how do you groom them, how do you train them. So for example, in my company, and it is very interesting and it is a real story, it is not a story, it is a real thing. Suppose I have a senior management team of 7-8 people. I don't think so, and some of them are working with me for last 19 years, 15 years. I don't think so ever I think that they will leave, or I don't think so they ever think that they will leave. So that kind of, and all of them were very youngsters, were positioned at a different level because they have grown with the organization, and they are, and so they are a part of the family. But again, I am differentiating it with like the old style of organization where they will remain at the same, so a person who will join in sales will retire at a sales head. Now here, there is a lot of rotation, lot of learning, lot of growth, and actually, two of those people have started their own companies where I am an investor. So what I am saying is, I enable them to become entrepreneurs. So it is my duty to ensure that their rate of growth is maintained, and what I expect from them is that they will totally gel with the organization and try to achieve organizational. So organizational goals are more important for them versus their own goals.
If I want you to look 5 years into the future, what big changes do you see in the relationship between organizations and employees?
Interesting question, and no answers, because it is again a crystal ball gazing and we never know how the future will evolve. I think one important thing which is going to happen, and again, and this is little contrary to what I have been saying till now, So, see, a lot of things are becoming more objective and more output based. So in a way, so again, if you look at any person, you evaluate the input and you evaluate the output. How much a person is giving input or providing input, or what is his input to the organization, and what is the output for the organization, a person, organization is getting from the person. So I think as we evolve, as boundaries are becoming irrelevant, countries are becoming irrelevant, okay, there may be more collaborative thing. People will not come to the offices, they will work from anywhere in the any place. So it is like more collaborative environment and totally output based. So organization will say, okay, these are the 10 things I am expecting, okay, and a person in a way needs to deliver those 10 things from where, whatever time, howsoever, it does not matter. So it so in a way the culture, so in a way the collaboration will be more more important there. Now the how people collaborate will be different than today. Today we sit in meetings, discuss a lot, waste a lot of time constructively, we have a lot of human emotion, okay. So the emotion element will reduce, that is my feeling. Whether it is good or bad, I can't comment, and it has already reduced to a quite an extent, but it will reduce further, okay, in terms of working. So people will more work towards output, towards achieving certain objectives. Emotions will be less, but I will still say the basic elements, the basic ingredients of transparency, truthfulness, energy, rate of change will be relevant. How does one create or inculcate those basic things into the technology or into a process is important.
Our next guest, Bhavani Singh Shekhawat, CEO, UK Europe, Akshay Patra Foundation.
Let's start with the employment landscape. How do you see this whole thing playing out in the social sector?
So I think the social sector has got its other challenges, where talent is at a huge premium, and our problems are continuing to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So we have in the social sector far bigger problems to solve than yesterday, and have access to far fewer resources than yesterday, because the resource that we try to access has got far more opportunities outside of the social sector. So having said that, we are now also beginning to see a generation of young people who are hugely attracted to the social sector because, like I said, their attitude is about making a difference. And somewhere down the road, they might realize that, look, maybe they have the skills, maybe they don't have the skills, but they do not really want to spend all their time coding in front of a computer. They truly want to solve a problem, and they want to get hands-on in solving that problem. So in the social sector, the problem is as severe, perhaps even more, because just the nature of the sector is such.
So there is this discussion we have been having, and one of the thoughts that came out is that as we look at increasingly people working independently, sort of the manifestation of the gig economy, if you please, employees are going to move from challenge to challenge. So which means they will also sort of seamlessly move between the social and the corporate sector. Do you see that happening?
Of course. I think more and more employees are looking at a portfolio of work in their lives. And increasingly, they're also looking for that portfolio on a daily basis. So it's not over a period of time that for the first 20 years of my life, I'll do this. For the next 20 years of my life, I'll do this. And for the next X number of years, no. It's not how they chunk their portfolio. People are looking for increasingly diverse and fulfilling experiences on a daily basis. For example, we do see in England where certain organizations are allocating up to 20% of an employee's hours towards doing what they choose to please. So if an employee says, I want to spend a fifth of my time really helping an NGO or a charity do better, employees are encouraging that. So it's no longer, it's not just gigs. I think it's a portfolio of experiences that people are now demanding and craving in their daily lives.
Yeah, right. So when I refer to the gig economy, it's also the one of the manifestations of the gig economy is that people are not necessarily working only for money, which means they're not trying to sort of climb the corporate ladder, but they're actually trying to do things that are more fulfilling and thereby working on specific projects which give money for a certain amount of time and doing things that they like to do for the rest of the time. So that was really the part I was referring to.
But I think it's a bit of both. I think it's not just either or. I don't think it's either making money or having a fulfilling life. People are finding more than one way of fulfilling their lives. So they might want to make money in three different ways in a day. They might want to work at a workplace. Then they might want to blog for money. And they might want to be a part of a band at a pub singing a few songs. But they don't want to do it just for the joy of singing. They also want to make money doing that. So the proportionality of input and output might vary, but people are having portfolio careers. They're trying to do more than one thing because they want different kinds of pleasures and outcomes in their lives, which in totality make them feel a lot better about their lives than leading a unidimensional life. And in so doing, they also want to believe that they are doing something meaningful.
This is such an interesting word you used, portfolio careers. That's an interesting one. We have to latch on to that at some other point. So that brings me back to the challenges of future-proofing your team. So if you straddle both the corporate and the social world, what do you think should be the focus for organizations to ensure that their teams are actually ready for the future?
I think organizations have to do a lot more, both with systems, people, and processes. They definitely need to have a far more systemic overhaul of how to hire. It's been said before that you must hire for attitude and train for skill. But employees have to now find smarter ways of hiring for attitude. And I think this problem is far more severe in India, where to do a job, you have to demonstrate the experience of having done that job before. And in the West, we are beginning to find a lot more sort of contrarian evidence to this, that when you bring people from a completely diverse set of industries and put them into a very different industry, the whole industry benefits and the person benefits too. I think we need to do a lot more of that in India. When you do that, you're clearly hiring for attitude, not necessarily domain knowledge or that skill. The second thing is they need to do a lot more with people. I think empathy needs to come back into the workplace. Hierarchy needs to be remodified in the workplace. So a challenge to hierarchy is not just having open plan offices and trying to separate out physical proximities from hierarchical distances. I think empathy is a lot more than that. Empathy is the ability to actually have a person-to-person conversation. Empathy is the ability to have a dialogue, to foster dialogues between two people where you're not talking to a position, you're talking to a person, and one needs to separate the two out. So organizations need to invest not just in that skill with their HR teams and their L&D teams. I think we need to invest that skill in every single person. And if the educational system is not doing that, it then becomes incumbent on the organization to really put a premium to the skills of empathy. Otherwise, we continue to have problems of gender issues. In India, we also have issues of which institute have you come from and all of the other badges. We need to find ways of decimating that. So that's the people side of things. And then clearly the process side of things. You know, what sort of behaviors are being rewarded? We still remain with the dregs of a system where performance was being rewarded and performance was largely being equated to having done what you promised to do. And if you need to make new promises because the world and the dynamics of the world you're in is changing at warp speed, how do you truly recognize and reward not just performance, but also failures? So I think we are struggling with some of the truisms you know, that encourage failure, etc. But how do you reward failure? How do you reward someone who's decimated hierarchy? How do you reward constructive criticism? How do you put all of that into the daily life of an organization? And that's really, really a composite challenge that smarter organizations are at least acknowledging, and some smarter ones are even embracing. But a large number of organizations around the world, and perhaps even more so in India, are just deferring. And my submission to everyone is, you can defer these important questions, but you can never deny them. Soon they'll come back to bite you.
TalentWise is brought to you by KnowledgeBridge. We produce customized and multilingual visual training content. We have worked on complex processes, products, and skills development for large blue-chip brands such as Tata Motors, Mahindra First Choice, HomeLane, Epson, Toyota, Citibank, and Consul Neowatt, serving diverse industries. Talk to us for your next custom content requirement and be pleasantly surprised. Call us on 99021-631-32.
We have been hearing from the industry leaders on their views around human resource, talent acquisition, training, and future development. Today, you heard a short roundup of thoughts from our guests who have been speaking to us for these past weeks. I hope you enjoyed the episode and would request you to share it and rate it at iTunes and Google Play while you download or subscribe. We have an exciting lineup this season and hope to have you with us in this exploration. See you again next week. Thank you for being with us today on TalentWise. We hope we helped you focus on some actionable ideas today. It was certainly enlightening for us. We hope to see you again on our next episode. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you're at it. Thank you in advance. This Show How To original podcast is produced for KnowledgeBridge, the multilingual visual training platform and custom training content creators by Show How To Audio. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time.